Welcome to the Go Health podcast. I'm Gillian Strain, Chief Exec of Go Health, an organization with a vision to enable churches and individual Christians to be a healing presence. And we like to think of the Go Health podcast as our gift into the world with conversations that inspire and empower us. Now, right now, the Go Health community is in a series called Creation Cares. If we're not careful, I think the climate crisis can lead many of us into a place of exhaustion and despair. So the question for us is, how can we counter that with hopeful stories, stories that inspire us to take action to protect God's creation? So our Go Health angle on this vital topic is to hear the call not to care for creation, but to care with creation. It's about rerouting and regrounding ourselves in creation as a positive and hopeful way to flourish. And in this episode, we'll be hearing from Steve Aisthorpe, author of Rewilding the Church. He is also a coach and retreat leader running the Kilmaloe Centre in the beautiful remote area of northwest Scotland. Steve, welcome. It's so good to connect with you today.
Oh, thank you, Julia. Pleasure.
So, Steve, that distinction we're thinking about in the Go Health community, caring with creation, not for creation, for you, is that a helpful way to think about things and thinking about your work at the Kilmaloe Centre?
I think it's extremely helpful. I mean, I see it in terms of a profound mutuality, I guess. So we receive so much from creation and we're stewards of creation. And it is, yeah, this a two-way thing. And I see it in the experience of people coming here as well.
So tell me about Kilmaloe. Tell me where it is, what you do, and what happens when you go there.
Okay, so Kilmaloe is the nearest place of any size is Fort William. It's about 20 miles from there. It's on the Ardgour Peninsula. It feels like an island because most people will arrive here via a short ferry trip, but it's actually a peninsula. It was an outdoor activity centre for many years, and my wife and I moved here just over a year ago to repurpose it as a Christian retreat centre. But nature, creation is a big part of what we do here. So we lease a large estate. It's about 3,000 acres of mountainside and coastline and woodland. And when people come and spend time here, we certainly encourage them as much as possible to be outdoors and exploring the creation around us.
Mm. And what do you aim for? I mean, there's lots of retreat centres people go to. What's your thing? What do you hope people get from coming to you?
Yeah, I think we are a bit different in that I would describe our setting as one of rugged beauty. So it's not a pretty place, if you like, and it's not a place that has been carefully designed or manicured in any sense. It's a wild place, a wild space. So there's a lot of space, and people find what they find here. You know, it's not a kind of pre-prepared thing. And as a community here, one of our emphases is noticing. Mm. So we believe one of the reasons we're here is to notice what's happening in nature around us. And we encourage our guests to do likewise, to pay attention, I guess, and to really nurture and foster that attention while they're here.
So the word wilderness, I mean, that so often comes up in the biblical narrative. Jesus had experiences in the wilderness. There are places of encounter, the places of danger and all the rest of it. Sounds very different from going to a national, nothing wrong with National Trust properties. I do love a cafe and so on, but it sounds a very different experience. They're both creation, but this sounds different and deliberate as well, your emphasis on the wilderness side of things.
Yeah, as you say, many retreat centres too are manicured places. They have beautiful gardens, and I've enjoyed many of those. I must say, there's something very wonderful about spending time in a garden that has been shaped by human intervention. But when you come here, it's rather different to that. There is a single track road runs through the edge of the estate. Apart from that, it's pretty much as it has been for a very long time.
For a very long time. I'd love to come back to the wilderness thing in a moment, if I may. But you said they're noticing. You hope people come and notice. Can you tell us more about this emphasis you put on people's experience of being there and noticing? I mean, does it start when they get off the boat, get out of the car? How does it start? And what do you think happens through the noticing?
So first of all, we try to encourage it to start even before then, Gillian. So we write to people before they come and encourage them to start their journey, their pilgrimage, their retreat as they leave their own home. So most people coming on quite a journey to get here, and we encourage them as they step over the threshold and begin their journey here to adopt a particular attitude, way of being. And that is very much focused on noticing. So we use a framework that is a biblical framework. If you look at John's gospel, the account of the resurrection, the word see or saw occurs several times. But when you look behind those words, there's actually three different Greek words. And the first one is where we read that Mary saw that the stone had been rolled away. And that does literally mean she observed. So through her physical senses, she noticed something. And then we read that Simon Peter saw the grave clothes. And it's a totally different word. It's the word from which we get our English word theory, theorio. And so it suggests he noticed something, but he started to wonder about it. He was curious. He began to construct theories of what might have happened here. And then the third word is where it says the other disciple, we assume it's John himself, saw and believed. And again, it's a different word that means he realized something. He had this little flash of inspiration. He understood something he didn't understand before. So three ways of seeing, if you like, noticing, wondering, and realizing. Mm. And so we offer that to people when they start their journey here and then while they're here to see what they notice what they notice. You know, of all the myriad things that they're surrounded with here, why is it that they noticed that thing? And to spend some time wondering, why might that be? What might that have to say to us? Be curious about that. And then over time, and it can be some time, a longer time, is there something they need to realize, something they need to understand, some little insight?
It sounds like real embodied work. Because we feel, it felt like, I felt that I don't know why I'm thinking about in my guts right now, but you sense things in your body sometimes. And for me, I'm a really emotional person. So I know that sometimes if I feel emotions or move or cry, then I've got to go, what is it that I'm curious? Well, what's led me to feel that way? So it sounds very embodied. And I wonder in what way does creation or the wilderness or your particular situation there help in that process?
Yeah, I think it is very embodied and it's also multi-sensory. So I use the word see and saw there, but it's not just about the visual senses. So, you know, in practice, if it's somebody going down through the ancient woodland down below the house here, for example, you feel the ground under your feet. It's spongy, it's wet. You hear it squelching and it's embodied. You're ducking maybe under a tree branch. Mm. And we encourage people also to kind of zoom in and out. So sometimes look at the big picture, look at the landscape, see where you are in the world. And at other times, get a magnifying glass out, get on your hands and knees and look at that piece of moss, that piece of lichen, and discover that there's also a huge landscape right there as well in a microcosm.
I mean, could you do this in a, I don't know, in a branch of McDonald's or, you know, in your local Tesco? I mean, there does seem to be something particular about nature that draws us in.
But yes, I think you can, Gillian, definitely. And some of the feedback we've had from people who've been here is they go away from a few days here having found riches through that kind of approach, that kind of practice, and they've taken it home and they've surprised themselves that, you know, they're walking down the street and they notice, and it may be something of nature, you know, a bit of a small plant, a bit of moss, a bit of lichen growing on the pavement, on the wall or whatever, and they realize there's so much that they've been missing, and they start to notice in a new way in their own context. Because of course the real value of a retreat is not measured on how you feel at the end of the week, but it's what impact it has as you go back into your own context, into your own routines and things.
Because you're talking about very mindful, a lot of connection with mindfulness, isn't there? But I'm really curious about, about the way you're sort of re-embodying people. And so, because our theme is caring with creation and seeing yourself as part of all this, and you're doing that work through an embodied experience, you know, in creation, realizing we're part of it still, and how healing that must be for us all, I guess.
Yeah. So it's embodied, it's mindful, but also crucially for us, it's prayerful. So in the way we're doing it here, we're encouraging people when they're noticing, when they're wondering, they're doing that in prayer. So we encourage them as they step over the threshold of their home to come here to say a short prayer. And the prayer we encourage them to say is probably the first prayer I ever heard as a child. I didn't grow up in a Christian home particularly, but at the primary school where I went, when we were had school dinners, the head teacher would say, "For what we are about to receive, may the Lord make us truly thankful." Mm. And we encourage people to use that. And if, as you step over a threshold, and of course we do that many times a day, as we go from one space to another, one situation to another, one kind of work to another, there's all these thresholds, and we just say that simple prayer, "For what we are about to receive, make us truly thankful." And if you think about it, within that simple prayer, there's a move towards expectation. So we're going to receive something. And there's a gratitude in it too. And I think those two things, you know, recognizing that when you step out, you're about to receive something, and to do that with gratitude is quite a powerful posture, if you like, in prayer.
And you're talking about thresholds, the Greek is for thresholds is a liminal place, isn't it? A place of transition and change. And that's why we have rituals at moments of our life, like birth, marriage, and death, and things like that. You're really introducing people into a space where you're leaving behind some of the certainties in order to make space for other things. Tell me some of the story. Who's coming to your place? You know, what kind of stories are you hearing? What needs are people coming to you with, and in what ways are you helping people meet those needs?
Yeah, so a real mixture, Gillian. So I think some people, you used the word liminal, so I think some people come because they sense they're in a liminal place. So for whatever reason, they're at a bit of a crossroads. Maybe they're wondering about a change in work or circumstances or whatever, and they just feel getting away for a few days of quiet and prayer and reflection is what they need to help them, maybe to make a decision, maybe to process things that are going on around that. Some people come here because they're tired. So we had a group here recently who are clergy from a particular denomination, and they're in their kind of early years of ministry. Mm-hmm. And I had the privilege of seeing physical change in those people during the few days they were here. So there were some people in that group, when they arrived, well, they looked exhausted, they were exhausted. And to see that lift and change over the days, and to see them leave in a very different place, was just a huge privilege. So yeah, some people are tired. And some people are seeking some sort of guidance, insight, perhaps exploring something. And, you know, our role primarily is to provide a space, to provide some hospitality, a place where stuff can happen. And we're constantly amazed that, you know, people tell us as they go away that that stuff has happened for them. You know, they've sensed they've had encounters with God, they've had insights and things, and it's not because of what we did. You know, we're not doing a teaching program most of the time anyway. But we provide some kind of guidance for them to do the sorts of activities I've hinted at.
Yeah. Yeah. When you say you could see them change, can you paint us a picture of things they said? Or
yeah, the physical countenance of a person changing, but also just to hear conversation, the tone of voice, and laughter.
Laughter.
You know, if you think of retreat centres, do you normally think of laughter? I don't know. You know, it depends. But I love to hear laughter around the place. And towards the end of that particular week, I was just mentioning where some people were really quite burnt out or on the edge of burnout. It's just wonderful to hear laughter as the week went on.
Some kind of joy came back, or some kind of was it a reconnection with something? They reconnected with nature. They reconnected with, I don't know, the joy of ministry again, or the joy of who God's calling them to be, or something.
I think you're right. I think in that case, I think people were reconnecting with why they'd gone into ministry in the first place. They were basically reconnecting with their own personal faith, with their first love. Because we were very clear at the start of that retreat, you know, that, okay, we're all clergy here, but we're not here to spend the week talking about ministry. You know, we're not here to talk about how to do a good funeral. We're not talking about the woes of the politics of church, like any of that. You know, this is about our souls, you know, about the wellness of our souls and restoring our souls, you know.
First love. I love that phrase, first love. I also love the ban and not, well, I'm sure you didn't say we ban it, but there's so often we can get into a negative culture. I was talking to somebody the other day about, you know, when we get together, we just have a good moan and how negative that can be. But, you know, aiming for a first love. And I'm so curious about this, your situation there in creation, in wilderness. I remember a few years ago, I walked the Lara Gru with my husband. Lara Gru's, I know you know it, Steve, because you're a great outdoorsman, but it's a famous Scottish pass. It's a fairly tough walk. You're really into wilderness, and you've got to keep going. Like, there's no rescue in the middle. Well, there is, as helicopter, but you've got to keep going for about 20 odd miles to. And we did it in October. We're the only people doing it. It was a really high wilderness, sort of alpine plateau kind of area. There's nobody else there. And I had this profound experience I've been reflecting on ever since, Steve, that I felt absolutely tiny, both in size because of these enormous mountains, but also in terms of my lifespan, because these mountains have been there for millions of years, and they're going to be there for loads of time more. So I felt really small and really insignificant, and it was wonderful, like really liberating. And I had this huge, and then not that's all I felt at the time, but reflecting back on that, you know, I had this great sense that that because I felt small and really God was really big, and I'm only part of this. So, and it was completely unexpected. I thought I was going to go there and say, well, it's all beautiful and that's nice. And it is, and it was, and it is. But I had this really, really strong sense of just being tiny, how wonderful that was.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, and what struck me and what you just said, Gillian, as well, is, and I've been thinking about it ever since, you know, these experiences have a depth, such a resonance that they go on in our lives, don't they? I mean, I've had similar experiences to what you just described there. And I think, yeah, this sense of awe and wonder, it goes so deep. Mm. I think one of the things we try to do here is we have a fire pit. So whenever the weather is suitable, we'll sit out at night, and it's a very dark sky here. And just looking up at the stars, that same sense of smallness, of our own finiteness in the cosmos. And it's that Psalm 8 thing, isn't it? You know, oh Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. And then, you know, how can it be that sense of, how can it be that you care for me? You know, I'm so tiny, and yet, you know, your love is so amazing.
It's really fascinating because there's sort of a juxtaposition, isn't it, between the grandeur and the hugeness of the universe that we can tap into. And yet the process you're describing, facilitated by creation, of tuning into God's call on our life, you know, making space that we can tune into our first love again and just rediscover God in us again. And that somehow happens in creation. We sort of both got the hugeness, but also the really personal nature of the work and the work that you're doing there in Kilmaloe.
Yeah, yeah, because there's the hugeness. But when we look at nature and when we spend time in nature, we're also awed by the intricacy, the interconnectedness of it all. I mean, one thing I encourage people to do is wonder about what is shaping this, what's shaping this landscape, whether it's on the big scale or on the micro scale. And invariably people start wondering about what's shaping me, what is making me who I am, and what of that is chosen, what is intentional, what is inevitable. And yeah, I think that sense of wonder comes in so many different ways. It's not just about the big things. It's not just about the tiny things, but all the interconnectedness. I spend a lot of time in nature, but I just regularly just get blown away. I just get overwhelmed by the wonder of it all.
And speaking about our connection with nature, as everyone knows, our climate's in crisis. I mean, I don't know what it was like with you, Steve, but we've just had the most apocalyptic rain. And I'm sure there's good science. I mean, I used to be an atmospheric physicist. That's my first love, my first training. There'll be good science in analyzing things. And to say, that's climate change, you need a lot of data and all the analysis and all the rest of it. But my guts are saying, that is weird rain. There's too much of it at the same time. And we can see the signs all over the world of the apparent effect of our action on the climate. It's affecting us, particularly affecting the poorest in the world more than those in the West who've created the problem. And we all know lots of stuff we should be doing in order to make a difference. But I just spent some time at Greenbelt this year, and the level of burnout of climate activists or activism, you know, people are exhausted because it's really hard. Change is not something quick enough, and people can get really burnt out thinking about the ways and acting the ways they should do to help with climate change and so on. How does the work that you do, helping people find some sense of who they are in creation, what lessons have you learned? What wisdom can you share about how to keep going on worrying about the state of the planet and doing stuff to change it in a way that helps, that doesn't impact on our health?
So I'm no expert on the climate science and things, but I guess as somebody who puts a lot of emphasis on this noticing in nature, I see two sides to it, I guess. One is we do notice changes that are happening. So the area where we live here, the farmers next door used to grow potatoes. It's become too wet over the decades. Things have happened here. It's changed in, you know, within living memory. But the other side, and I think this is where I just find a lot of hope, is that when we notice in nature, we recognize the incredible bounce back ability of nature, the resilience of nature, how it responds to changes. So that's not to kind of undermine the kind of arguments to minimize our impact, of course, or to play down the challenges ahead of us, but we can see with our own eyes how nature is incredible, and we still understand so little about it. I mean, I recently I've been getting into lichens and trying to learn a bit more about lichens, and it's just a whole world there. And there are very few people who know a great deal about lichens, and the whole science around it is still emerging.
Yeah, and that gives hope.
Yeah, because we just know the tip of the iceberg, and that. And every lichen is attached to something, which is attached to something, which is attached to something, and they're all, yeah, it's absolutely amazing
that
to see.
That interconnection.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Steve, before you did all this, you wrote a book around called Rewilding the Church. Can you, sounds like a big question, can you summarize this or tell us how it's connected with your work now in Kilmaloe?
Okay, so yeah, that is a book I wrote a few years ago, and it came on the back of a previous book, which was called The Invisible Church, which was based on some research about the changing shape of the church in Scotland in particular, but in the Western world more generally. And particularly, I did a number of research projects on Christians who are not engaged with a church congregation in the traditional sense. And there's been a huge move in that direction in recent decades. You know, we know lots of people have disengaged from church, but actually what the research shows is that for most of those people, their Christian faith remains centrally important to them, vitally important to them. So the church is changing shape in lots of different ways, but that's one of them. And at the end of writing that book, I was trying to, in the final chapter, look at all the research, my own and other people's, and see where are we going? What's happening here? And it just happened that at the same time, I was in a book club in the village where I lived, and we read a book about rewilding, as in the environmental idea of that book by George Monbiot called Feral. And so on the one hand, I'm trying to write a book. On the other hand, I'm reading this book. And I just found so many points of connection. What I saw happening in the life of the Christian community and what I saw in starting to understand about this idea of rewilding in nature. And the idea wouldn't go away. So I finished that book, but about over a period of 3 or 4 years, that idea just kind of grew and grew within me. Eventually I wrote that book, Rewilding the Church. But what it's not a book is, here's how to rewild your church. Here's an ABC of, you know, do this and your church is going to be amazing. It's not that. It's actually, the premise is God is rewilding the church. And when I say the church, I mean the church with a big C. So the Christian community, not just the institution. And actually one of the signs of that rewilding is that the institutions, particularly the larger ones, are crumbling or diminishing. But there's lots of other stuff going on. You know, the Christian community is showing itself in all kinds of other ways. So it's becoming much more diverse. So, you know, in terms of that metaphor of rewilding, it is a bit like we're moving from being a manicured lawn that had started to become rather kind of threadbare to becoming more of a wildflower meadow where there's a lot more diversity and there's stuff that's springing up because it was always there, but somehow it was constrained and now it can spring up. And there's other stuff that's kind of blown in on the wind, you know, just like a meadow that's just left.
So what does a rewilded church look like? What's going on in there?
You know, ultimately, I think a rewilded church is a church that has rediscovered its, let's use that phrase again, its first love. It's reconnecting. Again, coming back to connections, we've got some common threads going on here, maybe not surprising. at its heart, that book is saying where we see hope and this rewilding going on is a rediscovery of the rhythm of listening and acting. So prayerful listening. So let's say discerning, what does God want us to be?
Could we say noticing? Your whole notice thing.
Noticing, yeah, yeah.
As notice.
And so, and then coming out of that action, a courageous action. Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's a courageous listening.
Yes.
And a prayerful action, because listening is a courageous thing, because you never know what you're going to hear.
Yes. Amen. We love conversations. Yes.
You can't unhear it then. So.
Yeah. Less structures, less. Yeah, it's really interesting. So I just imagine, been to Greenbelt for the first time. People ask me, a lot of church people. I know a lot of people in church hierarchy and in structures and the organization and the meetings. So And they said, how is Green Belt? And I said, there was 11,000 people there who care about Jesus. And they're not a church. Because I was really struck about that. So that feels like a wilderness that, you know, they're out there. We need to get that, some of that back in. Or maybe not. Maybe just knock it down and start again. I don't know. But I love your image of rewilding, because it really picks up on what, where God is active as well, which is, sounds like what you're doing at the Kilmaloo. You're making space for people to sense that where God is ultimately the most active in God's own creation.
Yes, and to foster their own listening practices, I think, to encourage more listening.
Yeah, keeping that going all the other days of the year as well. Okay, I've got one final question, Steve. Somebody's listening, if anyone's listening, lots of people listen. If someone's listening today to this episode and they wish they were there at Kilmaloo, or they're listening and they want to experience in their day-to-day life today something about what you're talking about, that noticing, that reconnection, that first love stuff, what could they do today right now?
Well, for some people, they'll be able to step outside the door. And as you step outside the door, say, for what we're about to receive, may the Lord make us truly thankful. Go outside and notice what you notice. And it's as simple as that. And as you notice what you notice, just allow yourself to start to wonder. Some people maybe can't go outside the door for all kinds of reasons. Look out the window. Look out on the ledge outside your window. I wonder what's growing on there. If it's like my house, there may well be things. But just look out. You will see green things. There are very few places in this country where there is nothing, where you can't see some glimpse of the creation with God's fingerprints and heart print all over it. Might be the sky. It's all part of it. You know, we tend to think it's about, you know, trees and flowers and things, but of course, you know, the whole atmosphere, there's just always so much. And once you start noticing, you begin to notice and you notice more.
Well, Steve, for what I have received from you today, I am really grateful. And I'm sure many people who are listening are also really grateful for you sharing your story of Kilmaloo and your emphasis on noticing. For people to reconnect with their first love. Thank you so much for giving us the time here on the Go Health podcast.
All right. Thanks, Julian. Pleasure.
And we're going to be picking it up, Steve, over in the Go Health community, which is a group of people committed to exploring how to flourish faithfully today and to be a healing, noticing presence in the world. Thank you to Rosie Dawson, who is our producer, and to Wendy Lloyd from the Go Health team for all her work on this series and this podcast. Please do hit share and let others know about this podcast and the work of the Go Health community, where together we seek to flourish and be a healing presence in the world today. Thank you again, Steve. It's really cool to connect with you here.